was no proof ever found. Okay. I don't mean to slander the dead. Johnson,
what hath God wrought?
Sam Glamis
what
was a
weird. What hath God wrought?
It's you promise rot, that you have been completely like honest with me?
For the past week, I've listened and re-listened to a recording of my voice from 20 years ago. The words were uncovered from one of the 8 LPs I inherited from Alistair Glamis, a schoolmate who went missing the year after I graduated from high school. I've replayed this particular recording more times than I'd like to admit. I'm not sure what I'm listening for, but after the events of the past few days, I'm now convinced that I am a part of something stranger than I ever imagined. I have a lot to share in this episode. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 5, A Blooming Flower. During my 10-year high school reunion, I don't remember discussing the disappearance of Alistair Glamis. In fact, I don't remember him being brought up at all. Alistair was already a distant memory, a kid that made little to no impression beyond his bright, blonde, almost white hair. But Alistair had a secret. Clearly he was working on something, an audio project. He recorded himself in various situations. He also recorded me. I want to remind you that I never hung out with Alistair, and I only shared one class with him. It was a science class. Despite that, he recorded me saying some fairly bizarre things that I do not remember saying. I'm now going to play for you the recording of my voice. Part of this recording was played in my last episode, but my friend Tom Allegost called me in the middle of the night because he had cleaned up the rest of that section. When you listen, I advise that you sit in a dark room, or maybe just close your eyes. Are you ready? Here we go. Listen closely.
I don't know. I don't know. I can't do it. Taking someone's life, even Reynolds. That's it. There has to be another plan. I can't do this. This water you're drinking is millions of years old. It's probably gone through a bunch of digestive systems. To think that somewhere else, in another place, I might take that water back from you and pour it over in that garden over there, a flower blooms. A day earlier than that, it would have bloomed here. And I give it to someone who's sad. It makes them happy. There. I'm making someone happy. Go ahead. Drink it. You're thirsty. There. I'm making someone happy. Here. I'm about to commit a murder with you.
You're saying you have no other choice but to kill him.
Reynolds. You have no idea what you're doing. This is crazy. What are the results of a blooming flower? What hath God wrought?
During my last episode, Tom confronted me about the name Reynolds. I clearly say the name Reynolds. A name that is not connected to anyone I have ever known. I realize that the name Reynolds is a common name, but I have never known anyone with that name. I just haven't. Also in my last episode, Carol and I focused on those last few words. What hath God wrought? What we avoided was something more sinister. The mention of killing, a topic that is much more prevalent in the rest of this uncovered recording. It is undeniable. I appear to be talking about murder. I thought about not sharing this recording at all, but I knew. I know that this is not real. It is not real life. I've never killed anyone. I've never thought about killing anyone. Okay.
Abstract shapes turn out to be.
Here's my wife, Carol.
You know, maybe in science class, secretly recording you and then taking your words and editing them together so as to say strange things, like what people do for those funny YouTube videos, except in like a creepy way. Maybe that was his whole like art project, and he was going to give the recordings to you in the end, but you were just never really friends, so he just never got the chance, never got the opportunity.
What about what I'm saying? You aren't worried that sometime when I was in high school, Alistair Glamis and I killed someone?
Someone named Reynolds?
Yeah.
No.
I'm just wondering what the perception will be if I put this in the podcast.
How many people are listening anyways?
I have listeners.
How many?
People are listening.
Well, those people are going to think that it's just another part of the mystery. A bit of creepy fun.
I didn't tell her at the time, but when Carol said that the show was just a bit of creepy fun, it sort of stung me. If you've been listening, then you know I'm very conscious of not treating Alistair's mystery like a game. It's not a game. Also, if you've been listening, then you know I've been getting a lot of response to the project. I've been hearing from people way outside of New Hampshire. In fact, I've heard from people all over. And while it's taking me a while to get through them, I'm trying to respond to every single message. Most people speculate on the details I have presented. Some include wild theories. Michael Brobitz from California wrote to me about Sir Lancelot Canning. That was the name of the fictional author of The Mad Trist, a story within the short story The Fall of the House of Usher, which was quoted on the box that Alistair Glamis left for me. It turns out that Poe used the character name Sir Lancelot Canning one other time. He attributed the fictional Canning as the author of an introductory quote for a literary journal he was hoping to edit. Here's the quote, as read by my wife Carol for dramatic effect.
Unbending that all men of thy firm truth may say, lo, this is writ with the antique iron pen. This doesn't make any sense. What does this thing mean?
I'll explain it in a second.
Okay.
Poe printed the word truth in all capitals. And by the way, the journal never got financial backing, even though it collected subscribers. The funders dropped off suddenly. No one knows why. And this wasn't some random side project. Poe is quoted as saying that this journal was the one great purpose of my literary life. He added, undoubtedly, unless I die, I will accomplish it. And he died without it ever coming to fruition. Another message recently came to me from the Hunter Valley in Australia. Podcast listener Alison Perouch also had theories about that quote on the box. Hers concerned the knight Ethelred and the dragon. She wrote, I can't help but feel you are the knight in the story. I'm not sure I can pin down why. The recordings gave me chills. She later wrote, the box is like the shack in The Mad Trist. The contents of the box are the treasures. Finally, I want to share a message I received earlier this week. It was not like the others. There were no theories included. It was something else. There were photos. My first thought was that it was some kind of prank. I thought maybe someone was messing with me. I was very, very wrong. I'm going to have Rob, a person I met face-to-face just a few days ago, read to you what he wrote to me.
My name is Rob Rutledge. I've worked here for 4 years. We get storage units abandoned every once in a while. It doesn't happen a lot, but when it does happen, we aren't supposed to make an effort to return anything, but sometimes we do. Usually it's because the renter has died or at least is sick. This one was paid a year in advance, so we hadn't heard from the guy for a while. We try to give the renters the benefit of the doubt until we need the space. The boxes all had your name, so I did a search. When the podcast came up, I knew I had to contact you.
The photos that Rob sent were incredible. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was Alistair's mystery box, in triplicate, each complete with an Edgar Allan Poe quote on an index card taped to the side. I called Rob and set up a time for me to drive to Boston. The next morning I was there.
Is this the unit where you found the boxes?
Oh no, this is staff storage. I moved the boxes here. My boss wants them out, so I was hoping you'd take them.
Can you tell me who abandoned the storage unit?
I can't. That's our policy.
Was there anything else in the unit?
A few pairs of the same old sneakers. They were black high-top Converse. I threw those out. Also, there was another box.
Another box?
Not like these. That one wasn't sealed. It was full of books.
What kind of books?
Copies of the same book. We threw them out too. Well, I kept one copy. I think it's still over in the office. I'll give it to you if you just take all these boxes out of here.
Now that's a deal.
Before I left the warehouse, Rob Rutledge handed me a copy of a book called The Incredible Being by Samuel Badley. Well, it wasn't really a book so much as a thick pamphlet. The cover was orange with black lettering. The back cover was blank. I had stopped recording for the podcast at that point, but before I left, Rob did mention that there were at least 50 copies thrown out. He also said that he read a few pages and that it was some kind of self-published meditation guide. Those are his words. I asked him point blank whether the author's name was in any way connected with the name of the person who rented out the storage unit. He said he could not officially say. Again, those are his words. When I got home, I put the boxes in our living room. I still hadn't opened any of them. I think I was a little giddy with shock. The whole trip was so bizarre. I knew that this was going to be some kind of turning point. I needed to collect the right crowd before I opened the boxes. And of course, I needed to record everything.
You're wiping your brow like something scary just happened.
No, I'm just getting ready. I am sitting here with my good friend Tom and my wife Carol. Each of us has a cardboard box in front of us. Each box is sealed with tape in the exact same fashion as the one I inherited from Alistair Glamis. And each box has the same note from Alistair taped securely to its side. For full effect, can I ask all of you to join me in reading aloud your notes?
Please give this box to John Herman, who entereth herein a conqueror hath been, who slayeth the dragon, the shield he shall win. Sincerely, Alistair.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, everyone, open your boxes.
No way.
Did you really think that they are going to be filled with anything else?
As always, Carol was right. How could I have expected anything else? All three boxes had the same contents. 8 vinyl records. The albums were even placed in the boxes in the same order. We studied the boxes just to make sure there wasn't a deviation. There wasn't. They were really triplicates.
How does anyone get a hold of so many copies of Netherlands by Dan Fogelberg on vinyl?
I need to show that my heart is bruised, black and blue, black and blue. Do you remember the color of the
I am now in the possession of 24 more vinyl records, which presumably do not contain the albums advertised on their covers. I also have a vocal admission of murderous intent from myself as a teenager, that I am fairly positive I never spoke. As you may be able to tell, I'm trying to keep a level head about the whole thing. I would be lying if I said it was easy. As I alluded at the beginning of this episode, after the events of the past few days, I'm convinced that I'm a part of something stranger than I ever imagined. In my next episode, among other things, I will review the contents of The Incredible Being by Samuel Badeley. So if you're familiar with this book, then please be in touch. I want to hear from you. And if you know anything about how or why any of this was done, or you're connected with Alistair Glamis in any way and wish to share, or if you want to explore this project's companion materials, including links and videos, then please visit my website at disappearancepodcast.com. This project is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Thanks to Tom Allegost, Michael Brobitz, Allison Perruch, Rob Rutledge, and my wife Carol for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Prom Queen, Ben von Wildenhaus, and Rudy Sims for providing the music. Thanks also to Matthew Carano and Jeremy Murphy for the support. Please take a moment to rate and review this program on iTunes so word can spread. Thank you. Let's talk in 2 weeks. Partners in Crime Media.